Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
This is WTIC's Law Talk, a project of the Hartford County Bar Association. If you have a legal question, call now, 860-522-WTIC or 800-966-WTIC. And now, it's time for Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.
Okay, welcome to Law Talk. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, glad to be back with you. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. Last week, we were here electronically, but not in person, was away for a week, and so the program was pre-recorded. This week and the weeks coming up, live and in person, an excellent opportunity for you to get on the horn with us. The phone number is 860-522-WTIC, also known as 522-9842. This is your legal interactive toolbox. And the way that works best is if you've got a legal concern, a legal comment, a legal question, you give us a call and we'll help you out with that issue, or we'll steer you to somebody who can. We're here until 1 o'clock, and then it's news, sports, weather, and then pet talk after that. So if you're giving some thought to a call, not quite sure whether you want to do it or not, do it sooner rather than later. That gives us the opportunity to give you a little more time than we might have if we're bumping up against the end of the program. So let me tell you some of the things that we've got lined up for you today, okay? The first one here, somebody help me write the caption for this, but it works real well. The caption is, I kept my mouth shut and still got in trouble. Well, what are we talking about? A theory in the law called fraudulent non-disclosure, okay? Not everybody's aware of it. People have an idea what fraud is. We're going to tell you more about fraudulent non-disclosure. Why should you know about that? Well, because if you're selling something, your used car on Craigslist or something of that sort, or if you're buying something that way, these are really, really good legal rights for you to be aware of, or legal liabilities if you be the seller. Also coming up after that, we're going to take a trip to the federal court. We're going to talk about a recent search and seizure decision and false police reports courtesy of police body cams. A lot of people predicted there would be changes in police conduct. Well, there's also changes that are showing up in the criminal and the civil litigation that results from that. Right after that, a topic called inconvenience damages. What the heck is that? It wasn't so long ago if somebody came into my office in my private practice and they had a claim against someone else, and they would finish up with, and on top of that, I want to be paid for my time and my trouble. Generally, we'd say, well, you know, good luck to you. You can be paid for your time if you can document a loss of earnings. You can be paid if there's some other tangible opportunity that you had to forego. But in terms of inconvenience, other than that, well, the law seems to be changing somewhat in that area. It's not there yet, but there are some judges that are looking at that very carefully. So we'll tell you a little bit more about inconvenience damages. And if we get to it, we've got a legal phrase of the week. Actually, we've got two of them this week, and we're going to compare them. One of them is called lease pendens. And even though it's pronounced lease, it's spelled L-I-S. Pendens is P-E-N-D-E-N-S. And even though there's been a concerted effort to stamp out Latin in the legal profession, this one has persisted. What it means is litigation pending. Why would you care about this? Well, I'll tell you. If you own a piece of property and somebody makes a claim against you and files a lease pendens, that's going to be a big issue for you. So we'll talk about that. And if we get to it, we'll talk a little bit more about mechanics liens also. Mechanics liens, first of all, has nothing whatsoever to do with the person that fixes your car. Not that kind of mechanic. But it has a lot to do with people who provide goods or services for raising or repairing or building or demolishing or improving real property. So we could do a whole show on that all by ourselves, but we're not going to do that. That is the sequence of the stuff that we've got lined up for today. So just to remind you, here until 1 o'clock. In the meantime, love to hear from you at 860-522-9842, 522-WTIC. On the internet, it's WTIC.com, and hit the Listen Live button. So if you've got relatives, friends somewhere outside the listening area, but you think maybe they'd be interested, maybe we can help them, turn them on to us, and we'll see if we can put them on over the air. And in doing so, we'll be helping others that may have the same issue or may be concerned about the same general topic. Okay, enough said. Let's get back to this topic here. A lot of people always figured that, well, better to say less and not get in trouble. In fact, there's an old Confucian proverb, better to not speak and be thought a fool than to open one's mouth and remove all doubt. Well, this area of fraudulent non-disclosure is something that seems to fly in the face of that regular logic. And let me tell you a little bit more about it, okay? A lot of this comes from a recent court decision from Stanford, and the case is remarkable for a number of other reasons, but we're going to talk about the fraudulent non-disclosure aspect of this. So first, just a little primer. Fraud has four elements, or five, depending on how you stack them together. Number one, false representation of fact. That can be written, it can be verbal. Number two, the person making that representation knew it was false, and that's critical, okay? Number three, it was made to induce somebody to rely upon it. And number four, that person did rely upon it to her detriment, okay? So that's the standard definition of fraud, and it's been around in that form for a very long time. So fraud by non-disclosure takes it a little bit further, okay? This is the failure to make a full and fair disclosure of known facts that concern a matter where you have assumed to speak under circumstances in which there is a duty to speak and that it's accompanied by an intent or an expectation the other party will make a mistake. And you do this to induce them to act to their detriment, okay? So that is what happens, and we're going to talk about how that gets applied in our example of selling a used car. We're going to do that shortly, and just wanted to let you know that if you have a question about this, if you're thinking of selling something or you're a buyer for something like this, and this business about fraud enters into the picture, give us a call and we'll try to apply this to your fact situation. In the meantime, I'm told it's time for a break, and so we're going to be doing exactly that. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. This is your Legal Interactive Toolbox on WTIC News Talk 1080, WTIC.com, streaming audio on the net.
Son, you gotta work late.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime.
All right, welcome back to Law Talk. I'm Attorney John Matulis, a little bit of Eddie Cochran in Summertime Blues. Just to remind us, it's a gorgeous, almost August day out there. You're listening to Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. We're here until 1, and I wanted to finish up the business that we were talking about before about fraudulent non-disclosure, okay? There's one other thing that has to be done, okay? There has to be a failure to disclose known facts and a request or an occasion or a circumstance that imposes a duty to speak. So Here we go. Sam the seller has his used car that he decides he's going to sell on either eBay or Craigslist or Facebook, whatever it is. And then we've got Bonnie the buyer who just happens to be looking for a car just like that. Okay. So Bonnie gets in touch with Sam and she says, tell me about this car. Is there anything wrong with it? And Sam says, well, it's a good car. Now, Sam is well aware of the fact that the transmission on this car acts up regularly and that it's on the verge of a failure, which is going to cost several thousand dollars to repair. And how does Sam know that? Because the last time it acted up and they fixed it temporarily, the mechanics told him that. So does Sam have a duty to disclose this to Bonnie? And if so, is his failure to disclose it a fraudulent non-disclosure? Okay. Now, if you're looking for an answer to that question, the answer is, I don't know. But the whole purpose of this is to educate you to the issue. So if you are a seller of a product, this business about I just kept my mouth shut and still got in trouble may apply to you. Because if you create a situation where you have a duty to speak or where you've assumed to speak regarding the condition of the vehicle, well, then you may have an obligation to tell her, yeah, there is a transmission problem. And if she says, tell me everything you know about it, well, then you get into the situation here of whether you have to do that. Now, for Bonnie, the buyer of this car, okay, if you buy this car with a transmission problem and discover that shortly after, do you have any recourse against Sam? Sam says, well, you bought it as is, where is. So fraudulent non-disclosure is the legal doctrine that gets you out of that buyer beware type of situation. Okay, buyer beware works in the absence of fraud and now in the absence of a fraudulent non-disclosure. So that's the takeaway, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, on the issue of fraudulent non-disclosure with that clever caption that somebody suggested to me. I kept my mouth shut and still got in trouble. By the way, this comes out of a case from the Stamford Superior Court last month, and there's a side issue here, which I'm going to mention, okay? This has to do with proper conduct of people in litigation. And these were people that were fairly sophisticated, but boy, they must have really hated each other. So the court goes to great lengths to quote some of the nonsense that went on here. And the judge imposed sanctions on them. They were punished. They're answering some motions for summary judgment and they're filing affidavits. So the judge goes to the trouble to quote this, which he says is grossly inappropriate animus in the language. Quote, before I address the substance of the motion, I want the court to know that the plaintiffs are the singularly least professional, least honest, least moral people I have dealt with in 40 plus years of professional life. Another one. These people were the worst type of tenants one can imagine. They appeared to be professional as part of their fraud, and they were similar to the type of rich, entitled people who took over houses in the Hamptons to escape COVID and took advantage of the no eviction moratorium in New York. Now, the judge lambasted them for doing that. Why am I mentioning this? Because of the fact that this is a disciplined process. You may hate somebody with a passion, but if you are going to be filing court pleadings, let alone affidavits of fact, you cannot do that stuff. On top of that, the judge went even further, and this wasn't necessary, but the judge thought it was important to do it, okay? The judge goes on further, and he says, the court cannot evaluate credibility of testimonial-type evidence via affidavit, especially in connection with matters like this, but these introductory assertions almost force the court to be more attentive to competency of all the subsequent statements. In other words, you start off like this, it's going to reflect badly on everything else that you say. And if you get the burden of persuading the court of something, then that's what happens. The judge is going to be very circumspect about everything else that you say. So the word to the wise here is behave yourself. It is a disciplined, it is a civilized process. It is not the place to start off with ad hominem attacks upon your opponent. Okay? Enough said about fraudulent non-disclosure. We're going to shift to something a little bit different now. I sort of enjoyed this case. This one involves the city of New Haven, and our Mr. Andrews is the plaintiff, okay? It sounds like Mr. Andrews was not the sort of young man that you would want your daughter bringing home to meet the parents for the first time. Okay, Mr. Andrews is on probation. He's driving a vehicle. He's pulled over by Officer Dragoy of the New Haven Police Department after he ran a red light in a vehicle with heavily tinted windows, okay? Now, the heavily tinted windows is a bad thing. Back in our Memorial Day program, we talked about ways you could avoid getting in even further trouble with police. If you're in a vehicle with heavily tinted windows, which you shouldn't have because they're illegal beyond a certain degree of tint, some officer pulls you over, you roll those things down so that that officer can see inside there. They're approaching a vehicle. They have no idea what they're getting into. And if they can't see in there ahead of time, the apprehension level is a lot worse, and it's not going to come out as well for you. Roll them down. Okay, so let's get back to the facts of this case. Okay, the officer becomes aware that Mr. Andrews was not the vehicle's owner. Mr. Andrews did not have an active driver's license. The officer also smells a strong odor of freshly burnt marijuana and asks Andrews if he'd been smoking. Well, Mr. Andrews said the following, well, the vehicle belongs to my girlfriend. She smokes marijuana, but I haven't been smoking at the time of this traffic stop. Okay, what a guy. So anyway, the officer figures he's got probable cause and he conducts a search of the vehicle. And here it comes. It was recorded via body cam footage. Okay, stick with that. That's going to be important. We're going to hear more about that in a minute. So he's conducting this search and his body cam is running. He discovers live ammunition rounds underneath a change tray in the center console. Okay, now all of a sudden, this is more than running a stoplight. Okay, so Mr. Andrews later claims that the officer exerted significant and substantial physical force and, in effect, dismantled the interior of the center console while retrieving this evidence. Officer Dragoy says that he viewed the bullets while he was simply lifting up the change purse tray, okay? And the officer thereafter submitted a police report indicating he, quote, removed the loose change container, close quote, and gained access to the contraband bullets, okay? So what happens at the criminal case? Well, the presiding judge ends up being shown the body cam footage, and he immediately dismisses the case completely. This video from the officer's own body cam completely contradicts the report that he wrote, the report that he was submitting to the prosecutors and to the court. So the sanction from the court here was the charges get dismissed. Now, what happens after this? Well, Mr. Andrews is not quite out of the woods. He files a federal lawsuit against Officer Dragoy, and he claims that as a result of this episode, he was remanded to custody. Remember, he was on probation. Not on probation anymore. He got arrested and violated the terms of the probation, so now he's back in the slammer, okay? He also claims that he suffered severe emotional and financial consequences, which is pretty believable if now you're back in jail, okay? So he filed a suit against the officer, alleging that the officer had tortiously filed a false police report and that violated Mr. Andrews' Fourth, Fifth, and 14th Amendment rights. Got dismissed. The takeaway from all of that, if you don't mess around, you know, if you've got something like probation on you, be good. We're going to have to break for news. More of Law Talk after that. I'm attorney John Matulis.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Law Talk right here on WTIC. I'm Attorney John Matulis with you right up until 1 o'clock today. I'm here from the Hartford County Bar Association, and this is the time in the program where we advise you that if you don't have a lawyer and you're interested in some high-quality, inexpensive legal assistance, please consider the Hartford County Bar Association's not-for-profit lawyer referral service. This is a way better deal than selecting a lawyer from some billboard that you think you saw driving down the highway or from what the person sitting on the next bar stool happened to tell you last Friday night. Okay, this is the way it works. You call them at the phone number that I'm going to give you. They'll ask you a couple of questions to determine the specific nature of your legal inquiry. You then get referred to an attorney. Well, who's this? First of all, the attorneys are all vetted, so they are all insured. They are all free of disciplinary problems. They have all been practicing and have experience in the specific discipline that you're interested in getting help in, okay? So what do you get and what does it cost? You get a half-hour consult with the attorney, and that can be over the telephone. It can be in person, face-to-face. It can be in a Zoom type of electronic meeting, if that's what you want to do. And after that, there's no further obligation whatsoever. So what does all this cost? Well, there's a one-time only fee of $35, and that goes to underwrite a portion of the cost of running this program, because there's phone lines, there's office space, there's office staff, but $35 for a half-hour consult is just a pittance compared to what the attorney's private practice hourly rates are, okay? Now, on top of that, you've got a personal injury claim, they will waive the $35 fee. You've got a Social Security disability claim, you're not going to be charged any fee either. Well, you don't have either of those, but you've got a workers' compensation claim, no $35 fee. At the end of the half hour, no further obligation whatsoever. But if further legal services are requested, you and the attorney are free to discuss that. If you reach an agreement to go forward together, that's fine. If you decide that you're done with each other, that's the end of it, and that's fine also. So this is how you access the Hartford County Bar Association's not-for-profit lawyer referral service. Get your pencils ready. You phone them at 860-525-6052. That's 860-525-6052. That is the Hartford County Bar Association's not-for-profit lawyer referral service at 860-525-6052. And I should mention also that if you're listening on the internet and you are far removed from Hartford County, don't despair. There are similar programs scattered all through the country. They're built on a model that comes from the American Bar Association. And I understand they've had people that have called from a number of other areas, some of whom have heard about it on Law Talk here, and they've been able to put you in touch with a similar program in your geographical area. So even if you're listening from far away from Hartford County, Connecticut, don't worry, they can help you if you need similar types of service, and this program sounds good to you. That's 860-525-6052. Okay, back to some of the programming stuff. We use this phrase here, inconvenience damages, and what that is and what's going on. Well, it wasn't so long ago in my private practice, somebody'd come in and they would have a claim against somebody. Maybe their car got damaged and so on. And they would conclude with, and on top of that, I want to be paid for my time and my trouble. And our answer usually was, well, you can be paid for your time if you can document a specific loss of income that resulted from this, whether it's lost wages, whether it's an interruption in salary, whether there's some business opportunity that you lost that's directly related to this. But in terms of time and trouble, nah, you're not going to get that. So we're going to take a look at a decision from a very recent case. And I'll tell you now, there's a split of authority on this, but that's a lot more than used to be the case a few years ago. This case involves Randy Goodine and Ashley Weber, okay? Randy Goodine's parked car is at the side of the street. Ashley Weber strikes Randy's parked car because she's attempting to eat while she's driving, okay? So Randy makes a claim that because of this negligent operation of her motor vehicle, he suffered several things. First of all, he suffered a diminution in value to his car and loss of the right to use the vehicle. Okay? Now, you might remember a few weeks ago we talked about diminution in value in cars. And this is another theory that became popular only after Carfax and similar services were available to determine whether a particular vehicle had been involved in an accident. What the law says is that if my reckless driving, my negligent driving injures your vehicle, that my insurance company is going to pay either the cost of repairing the damage that I've caused or the fair market value of the car, whichever is less. Okay? So it used to be that, well, if a good repair job was done, the car looks as good as new, so be it. But if you go to sell that car, a buyer runs the VIN, the vehicle identification number, through Carfax, and they say, oh, accident reported. All of a sudden, the fact it's been in an accident reduces its fair market value. So that's the first thing that this guy was looking for. That is a legitimate, recognized claim, as we talked about a few weeks ago when somebody's new Tesla Model X was damaged and the experts couldn't determine whether it was $95,000 of damage or $5,000 of damage. But the case here has to do with these inconvenience damages, in other words, for my inconvenience and my time and so on. And what the judge basically says here is the following. First of all, there's no specific appellate guidance regarding the legal sufficiency of these damages claims in a property damage action, especially a motor vehicle property damage action. So all we've got is a bunch of trial court decisions. Guess what? There's a split of authority, and the majority of them have stricken these claims. Why did they do that? Well, they basically say that there's a public policy argument that you can make, but it doesn't seem to apply. They said the stronger public policy argument is something like this, and I took a quote out of the case to give you sort of the flavor of it. Quote, while it seems there should be a remedy for every wrong, this ideal is limited by the realities of the world, close quote. Now, applying that to poor Randy John Goodine's case against Ashley Marie Weber, well, how much time did he have to spend arranging for the replacement vehicle? How much inconvenience did that represent? And what were the losses that he can document other than it was a nuisance, it was inconvenient, it was a pain in the butt? Okay, well, the court went on to say the task of the law is to limit the legal consequences of a wrong to a controllable degree. So what is the takeaway on all of this one here? The takeaway is that this theory is getting some traction. Right now, the majority of trial courts that have dealt with it have dismissed it or have stricken the claims, but there are a couple that have allowed them to proceed, and we may end up with some appellate advice on it. So, especially for those lawyers out there that were trained, as I was, to tell your clients that you're not going to get compensated for your inconvenience because of the fact that it's not recognized, well, keep an eye open because the law may be changing in that respect. So that's a fast overview of the situation about inconvenience damages. And we don't know how this case is going to come out, but we do know that the court struck the claim for the inconvenience damages. Now, one of the things that is going to emerge here, apparently, is this diminished value claim. We did talk about those before. You probably remember those. And if this happens to you, you can still pursue that claim if it's appropriate in the facts. We're going to have to take a break. I'm getting the sign, so we'll be back in just a short while. You're listening to Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080, WTIC.com, streaming audio on the net. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. Okay, back to Law Talk on a summer in the city or a summer in the suburb of Farmington Day. That's where I am right now in our studio, just back from vacation on Cape Cod, but glad to be back with you. Okay, we're going to go to legal phrase of the week, and we've actually got two of them here. We'll get into them. We'll try to contrast them if we can. We'll give you some practical applications so you know how these things work in the real world. First phrase, lis pendens, okay? This is pronounced lis pendens, same thing. It's spelled L-I-S. The last word is P-E-N-D-E-N-S. Yeah, I know it's Latin. I know it's left over from the dark days when I went to law school, but they haven't figured out a way to change the name on that yet. What is it? Okay, it's a notice to the world of the fact that there's a claim. In fact, the best way to describe it is that a notice of lis pendens, when properly recorded on the land records, warns third parties, such as prospective purchasers, that the title to the property is in litigation. And the court says the doctrine underlying lis pendens is that a person who deals with property while it is in litigation does so at her peril. Okay? So that's a quote from a recent case that addressed these. So where do these come up? Well, one example is they come up when there are mortgage foreclosures. And a lis pendens has to have something to do with an ownership claim or a claim of an interest in the title to the property. For example, in our previous case, if Randy Goodine sues that lady, he can't put a lis pendens on her house. Why not? On the title to her house. Why not? Because of the fact that it had nothing to do with the real property. So it comes up a lot in mortgage foreclosures, which may be one of the more common places to find it. And as the court just described, it puts the world on notice that there's litigation pending and that it may affect the title to the property. So if somebody has a mortgage foreclosure pending, and there's a lis pendens, but they come along and trying to transfer the title to someone else, that new person, the buyer, the transferee, takes title subject to that litigation, which means they may end up paying some consideration for a piece of property that's going to be lost in a foreclosure. So let me give you a little bit more of an example about that, okay? Supposing that I agree to sell my place to Tom Conley Wilson, my producer, for, let's pick a nice round number, $100,000. And that's subject to him getting a mortgage for $80,000. So we've got the signed agreement, and Tom is going through the process of getting the mortgage. But time goes on and time goes on, and he still hasn't gotten the mortgage commitment. They haven't refused him, but it's taken a long time to process it. Well, Joey Burgoyne comes along, and Joey says, hey, if your place is still for sale, I'll give you $150,000 cash for it. So I agree to that. Now, Tom hears about it, and he sues me for breach of contract. His lawyer puts a list pendants on the title to the property on the land records. Okay, list pendants, litigation pending, lawsuit for breach of contract. Okay, because it affects a claimed interest in real estate that went to Tom at the time that we signed the contract. So now Joey Burgoyne says, well, I'm backing out unless this list pendants business gets resolved, because you can't deliver clear title to me with that thing on the record. So he's exactly right. The problem is that the list pendants is doing exactly what it was intended to do, to put notice to people like Joey, who may be interested in buying the property, of the fact that there's this lawsuit pending, and that depending on how it turns out, they may end up buying the property at their own peril. Okay? Now, what do I do? Well, there's ways you can get them dissolved. Okay, the simplest way is you go to court and there's a brief hearing. The party who put the list pendants on has to show that there's probable cause to believe that they're going to prevail in the matter. Remember we talked about probable cause just recently? Well, it pops up again in this context. So if they cannot do that, the court will order the list pendants dissolved. Now, if we were talking about that car accident case with the inconvenience damages claim, and that was a list pendants put on the defendant's house, she would win, and the court would dissolve the list pendants. Why is that? They would do so because of the fact that the action that took place had nothing to do with a claimed interest in the title to her house. So that's what happened with there. Okay. Now, this has to pertain to a claimed interest in real property, and that's why you see these all the time. Now, let's contrast that, if you will, with the business about mechanics liens that we talked about earlier. And this is a topic that we can go on for a very, very long time. We're not going to have time to do that, but there's a lot of litigation. As I mentioned in the intro to the show, this has nothing whatsoever to do with the person who repairs your car or your truck. The phrase mechanics lien goes back a long way. What it specifically pertains to is work that was done on real estate, okay? For example, just to give you a better idea, somebody furnishes materials or provides services, and if it's in the construction, the raising, removal, or repair of any building or any appurtenance, or improving any lot in the site development or a subdivision, and there's an agreement with the owner or by consent of the owner, well, then the party that hasn't been paid can put a mechanics lien on the title to the property. So let's contrast those a little bit with the list pendants. The mechanics lien, there doesn't necessarily have to be litigation pending at that point. Most of the time, there is not. List pendants, there must be litigation. By its very definition, list pendants, litigation pending, means that there has to be a lawsuit. Okay? So, mechanics liens can be put together relatively easy by knowledgeable attorneys, but they're tricky. There's a lot of I's to dot and T's to cross, and if you don't get them right, they're subject to dismissal. Some lawyers prefer not to do them. They say, for the sake of doing the mechanics lien, why don't you just start a real lawsuit, and so on. Some clients say, well, the mechanics lien is less expensive, it's quicker, it's easier. Here's a couple of drawbacks with the mechanics lien, okay? First of all, it's only good for 1 year from the date it's filed. So I know I've had clients that have had mechanics liens put on their property, and I say, well, we can go to court and have a hearing about whether there's probable cause to sustain the validity of that lien, and you'll incur expenses. You know, you may have 5 or 7 or 8 hours worth of billable time plus our costs. Or are you planning on selling the house anytime soon? Nope. Are you planning on refinancing your mortgage anytime soon? Nope. Well, if that's the case, do you want to let it just ride for a year and then it's going to become null and valid, null and void as a matter of law? And that'll be the end of that mechanics lien. So contractors, builders, people that put mechanics liens on sometimes end up wanting to be thrifty in the beginning because it's less expensive, but they end up with something which may not result in the desired outcome. And then you've got to go to a lawsuit anyway. Now, here's the reason why a lot of times mechanics liens are selected. Remember, these have to do with projects that typically involve building, reconstructing, renovating, things of that sort. They're expecting that somebody is going to be conveying title to this property, either to a buyer, in which case they have to convey clear title, free of the mechanics liens, or they're going to be refinancing a mortgage or putting a mortgage on the property, and the lender is going to say, well, you need to get that a release of that mechanics lien. So that's why these things have several different aspects to them. Now, there's also another way to do this, and these are not just small cases. There are cases where people have put on mechanics liens for hundreds of thousands of dollars, and sometimes in the high hundreds of thousands of dollars that I've seen. So they certainly have enough at stake to justify a formal lawsuit. But here's the other thing that can be done. If somebody says, well, I'll put a mechanics lien on the property and it will screw up their sale or it'll screw up their refinancing that's going on, guess what? They've got the right to have it bonded off. Specific statute says, yeah, you can put up a bond with surety and the court will order the mechanics lien dissolved because we're not going to prevent you from selling or transferring a substantial value in the property because somebody's got a claim for a portion of it. So that's our Law Talk legal phrase of the week for today. And that music is John's cue to wrap up yet another Law Talk. So it's been great being with you. I'm glad to be back. Thanks very much to Thomas Conley Wilson, our producer. I'd like to have him get a few more calls from you folks so you can get to meet him also. And we'd love to put you on the air on future shows so that we can help you with your specific problem. But in the meantime, please have a safe weekend. And by all means, enjoy the good weather while we've got it. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. See ya.
Law Talk is presented as a public service by the Hartford County Bar Association. Its content is intended to be educational and informative, but is not considered to be formal legal opinion. If you want or need a formal legal opinion upon which to rely in decision-making, please consider formally engaging an attorney to review all relevant facts in detail and examine the pertinent law as it applies to those facts. A solid opinion means better decisions. The views expressed during this program are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of the Hartford County Bar Association, its officers, or its directors.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.